Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the sixth episode of the Strength Academy podcast. Mundo here, once again, joined by Grayson.
How's it going, guys? I'd like to take a second to apologize for my swamp person voice. Fighting off a little bit of a thing, so if you hear some coughing or can't understand what I'm saying, sorry.
Just deal with it. So we wanted to kind of discuss some of the things that are going on in the weightlifting community. One of them is Masters Worlds, which is going to be the last weightlifting meet with the old bodyweight categories.
I'm fairly sure, yeah, that's going to be the last time to get them in with those old categories.
Okay, so, and I myself am headed to Masters Worlds, and Grayson was kind of curious about my travel plans. Like, what did you want
to
know?
Well, so I thought it would be kind of interesting to talk about. This is your first trip out on an international meet, as it is Emily's, who's also going from our club.
Right.
And doing an international meet versus an American Open Series, or obviously a local meet, is going to present some different challenges. So I was kind of curious, like, so on your flight out, what sort of things are you going to try to do to, you know, not stiffen up on the plane? So, like, are you going to be doing, like, compression pants or TENS unit, or do you have any kind of plans for how to stay loose on the flight? You going to be that guy squatting by the bathroom every 30 minutes?
Yeah, that's the plan, is doing glute activations up and down the aisle. So I leave pretty early in the morning, and I'm going to be flying out 2 days before, but I'll actually arrive the day before. So it's a long flight. And so my plan was to wear compression pants. Like, I wear those Virus compression pants when I train, but I was going to wear them on the way out. And I have compression stockings as well. So yeah. one of the other athletes actually mentioned wearing compression stockings so that your ankles don't swell. And probably drinking enough water, but not so much that, you know, I get bloated, and eating enough and making sure that I just I give myself room to make weight. So I'll get there. Yeah, like you said, you'll travel through time. Barcelona's 8 hours ahead of the current time. So I will be lifting 8 o'clock on Friday in Barcelona, which would be midnight Thursday here. So that's the plan for that part out.
So do you kind of have a plan for your, because since you are kind of having to watch and maintain your weight, airline food and airport food is fairly unreliable. Are you planning on packing, you know, nuts or trail mix or jerky, or are you going to try to find food out there? And that kind of ties into, have you kind of looked at what are you going to do for food before you lift? Have they mentioned anything about like things that are around that you can grab to eat?
I was kind of looking into that. There's some cafes that are close by. I was actually going to find a McDonald's. I usually eat McDonald's hotcakes before I lift. So I was going to look into that before I head out. But more than likely, I'll take like snacks with me on the plane. And like beef jerky is a good one. I do like raw nuts and things like that, cashews and pecans and I'll probably, usually when I'm traveling, I will get like a juice. Like, there's all kinds of juice places. So I don't have a lot to eat, but I have something that's calorically, you know, more dense than the chicken sandwich at, you know,
yeah.
from some place in the airport. But yeah, so usually that, and I've been looking into making sure I have food available. There's some things that I use that I probably won't have, like Pedialyte. I like to have Pedialyte before I lift, just in case I'm a little dehydrated, and like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. But I'm sure there's markets that are close by and some places that I can probably pick up similar things to those. If not, sugar and salt and water.
Yeah, pretty much make your own.
Gatorade, yeah.
No, because, yeah, I mean, that's one thing that when I've listened to interviews with athletes traveling, is the finding food that you're used to and, you know, making sure to do that rather than try some, you know, delicacy that you have never had before lifting, you know, and risking having an upset stomach on the platform.
Right.
Granted, you know, it's not the same as if you were going to, you know, Nicaragua for a competition, but so trying to, So I had to think about like what can you find that's like pretty consistent and that's pretty clearly going to be, something that's you're used to, and then saving the trying all the new things for the days after the meet.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. 'Cause like, I think pancakes are pretty standard, I would hope, across the board. Like, there's not really a whole lot of weird pancake variations, or a muffin or something. Like, I like blueberry muffins, so I'll eat that. And fruit should be
You
fairly
should be able to
standard
find,
too. But yeah, those kinds of things that are easy on the stomach, they provide pretty quick recharge to get ready before I lift. So yeah, I'll probably stay away from like sushi or ceviche or anything that's like raw, no raw steaks before I lift. I don't want to be exploding on the platform. That would be terrible.
Yeah, not setting yourself up for the best. So are you gonna be doing so like right when you get off the plane, are you gonna try to find the check scale right away, or are you pretty far away so you're gonna have to just kind of hope for the best and check in that morning?
No, the hotel that I'm staying at is 14-minute walk from the venue. So I could pretty much just drag myself over there, just, walk, and then as soon as I find my hotel, I'll check in, and then I'll head over to the venue, get some movement in, probably do some empty barbell work, check out the venue itself, the platform setups, the training hall, and maybe look around while I'm doing that for maybe a place that I might have missed on my internet search for food. And probably try to take a nap because I'm not going to be used to being up and moving around when the time zone, like, in the time zone difference makes it really, really odd. But yeah, so like, when international athletes usually travel, or when athletes travel to international competitions, for like Pan Ams or Worlds, like Ashgabat is going to be the Worlds this year. And so a lot of athletes will actually get there a week ahead of time. But the problem is like, I've always wanted to go to Barcelona. It's been kind of a dream of mine to go there. And to go there and have to be conscious about cutting weight or not getting to do the things that I want to do, kind of made me choose to make my flight closer to when I lift, and then I have more days after to enjoy. So I'll be there, for maybe like a week, in addition to the time that I'm there lifting, and Emily's lifting as well.
That's gonna be an awesome time, man.
Yeah, it's gonna be good. So as far as competition goes, one of the biggest weightlifting meets to ever be recorded is one that's coming up, and that's American Open Series 3. And that's not just here in America, that's like across the world. This is gonna be the biggest meet, the most athletes that have ever participated in one weightlifting competition.
Yeah, I think there's gonna be five platforms. And it's going to be a madhouse from 8 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night all week.
Yeah, so lifting starts on Thursday, September 13th, and it's going to go all the way through September 16th. So we have quite a few athletes going, and I know a lot of them haven't been to one of these types of meets before. I know it's a regional meet, and a lot of them, this will be a first-time experience for them. So a lot of the time, people don't understand etiquette. They come from some other sport, maybe have zero experience in an actual weightlifting club environment. Maybe they come over from CrossFit and they just don't really have an idea of how etiquette works in the sport. What do you consider is important when you're at those types of competitions, and maybe in the gym too?
Well, so I think this applies in the gym, but it especially applies in the back room, is that your back room warm-up area behind your platform is probably going to be fairly condensed. There might be eight platforms. We'll kind of see what the size of the venue is, but you're going to be sharing a platform with somebody you don't know, so expect that going in. And showing that person the same respect that you'd show the people you train with at the gym. If they're getting ready to take one of their warm-up lifts, make sure that you're not standing on the platform while they're doing it, or that you're not walking in front of them. If you have to make a trip across the room, kind of check and see who's lifting right now, and maybe wait a second before crossing in front of them. Basically, try not to intentionally or accidentally distract the other competitors in your session. I think that goes a long way towards kind of just being a polite competitor. I always try to make an effort to, say hi to the person that we're sharing the platform with. And when our athlete takes a lift, I like to ask them or their coach, "Hey, what do you want next?" and help them load the bar too. Because, if they're back there by themselves or with just one coach and we might have two people helping us load, I want to help that person as well. So just kind of staying in communication with them, like, "Hey, when do you need to take this? We need to take a lift in a minute. Do you mind if we go right now? And then we'll load up for you what you're going to do next." So I think those two things go a pretty long way. Do you have any thing in mind specifically?
No, not necessarily in specifically in mind, but I know in the past competitions that we've been to and that I've done, you rarely have a platform to yourself. You're going to share, and if it's not with your teammates, it's going to be with some other lifter from another club, another part of the country. And like Grayson says, just don't be a jerk. Like, don't be impolite. Like, these people are there just like you are. They are probably gonna, lift before or after you. You don't want somebody like to ruin your experience because, they were rude. And one of the things that I really hate is when people walk or stand in front of you when you're lifting. And that's a pretty standard across the board. Like, when somebody's trying to concentrate and focus on doing their lift, the last thing they want to see is your ugly face in front of them, right? So, and it's different when you're on the platform, like actually on the platform, up on the stage, when you're competing, because you don't focus on anything that's really in front of you. You try to look a little bit higher. Even if that center judge is right in front of you, it's not like that at one of these meets, like
They're
one of
gonna
the
be
national level meets.
below you.
They're gonna be underneath your line of sight. So, that kind of works out in your favor. So it's just you on the platform. You have a clear line of sight, and so that's not really an issue when you're on the platform. But yeah, when you're in the back, there's going to be people, a lot of people, and equipment all over the place. Just be mindful of what you're stepping in front of and who you're stepping in front of, and try not to be rude and communicate with whoever you're on the platform with.
I think that's really important. Kind of going along with that, you don't need to be as serious as a heart attack in the back. This is fun. I like lifting. Competing's a good time. I like to joke around a little bit and keep it light, because I just lift better when I'm, not just being dead stone serious. But at the same time, I think on both ends, I've seen some kind of distracting behavior in the back where people are either exuberant and yelling and shouting and jumping around, or the other way where they're angry and growling and just being distracting. So kind of keep your emotions in check. You can be excited if you miss a lift, you can be frustrated, but don't call out a needless attention to yourself. It's one of those things where it's like, be happy to be there, but you don't need to, be whooping and distracting other people or throwing a fit if something's not going your way. Like, try to keep yourself under control because other people are trying to lift and you don't want to distract them from what they're doing. One of the other things is we're going to be having a decent amount of our team members help, count attempts and load bars, and they'll be in the back kind of helping their teammates out. So the order of lifters is going to be displayed on a screen. Stand far enough back from the screen that other people can see it too. If you're going up to get a quick count for somebody, make sure that you're not blocking the view of everybody else. Keep that open, so that they can see what's going on as well. I think that's kind of a nice thing to do, is to, try to not obstruct things as much as possible.
Yeah, that's true. There's been meets where people will just crowd the monitor so that you can't count attempts because they're just sitting right in front of it. They're standing right in front of it, and that's really annoying because you're trying to keep track of where your lifters are at. You're trying to keep track of where the attempts are at, what the weight on the bar is, so that you can continually adjust your warm-ups. And it's just annoying when people just camp there. And come on, just check what you need to, go back to your lifter, and just, you know, be courteous to everybody. Don't just hog it up. You're not the only one that's there. And another thing is, don't bring your whole entourage back there. You need your coaches and maybe one person to help load bars, and that's it. Like, they're only going to give you a limited amount of usually passes, like the session passes.
You usually get four.
Four. So, like, your coaches should be there for you, and maybe one, at the most, two people to help load or something like that. Like, don't drag your whole squad into the back.
Well, and we've seen plenty of people try to sneak people in that don't have passes, and again, it's just about creating distraction.
Right.
So it just minimizes the amount of chaos in the back, because there's already a decent amount of that. These sessions are fairly short, like close together. Like, they're all within the same 5 kilo total, it seems.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
So things you can expect if you're lifting in one of those kind of sessions is fairly long breaks between lifts, because a 5 kilo jump will mean 6 or 7 attempts for people. So we're going to have to be practicing as a team our ability to work up to a weight, have a sort of long break, and go out and take another. So keeping focused on, you know, what do you need to do to stay warm between lifts? And we'll be doing some things in training to focus on that. But I think a lot of what you talked about your plan for what you're going to do on the plane, what you're going to do when you land, those are things that I think are just good advice for anybody going to a meet like this for the first time. So when you get in, you should check into your hotel and go and look at the venue. Make sure that you know where the weigh-in area is. Make sure that you go and check the official scale. Make sure that your weight's on track. Find out where the sauna is. Find out where the training hall is. Because some of our people, if they're getting there Thursday and lifting Sunday, will have to get one or two training sessions in while they're at the competition. So finding out where everything is, and finding out, you know, planning ahead of what am I going to eat? What am I going to have available? Do I have my Pedialyte? You know, kind of make a checklist for yourself of the things that you like to use at meets, the things that you like to have around, is probably a good idea for everyone across the board.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's why I do it, just because I have experience with that same type of thing. Because traveling, when you're doing a local weightlifting meet and it's in your hometown, you sleep in your own bed, you know what's around, you can get your favorite food that you usually eat before you lift. But when you're traveling, there's all kinds of different factors. You're sleeping in a new place. I don't know, like, for me, it's hard to sleep. No, even though it's a hotel and all the hotels are pretty much the same, it's always weird for me to sleep in a new place. So there's just a lot to take into account when you're traveling. And just kind of be prepared for that. Just be prepared that things aren't going to always be exactly how you want them to, or the food that you like isn't going to be available. Most of the, like, the staples will be. Like, you can always get a peanut butter and jelly sandwich to put together. You can always get a Snickers bar, which I like to eat between snatch and clean and jerk. And Pedialyte, as long as you're here in the States, like, it's pretty easy to find too. It's just those odds and ends that are maybe specific to where you live that might be different.
Yeah, so kind of make a plan if you're sharing a rental car with somebody, or, you know, something like that. Like, hey, when we all get there on Thursday, let's go down to the grocery store and pick up a few things for the hotel room, stuff that you like to eat for weigh-ins. I personally am, like you, kind of a fan of the peanut butter and jelly sandwich approach, just because it's usually easy on your stomach and it digests pretty quick. I typically don't like to try to eat like a Subway breakfast sandwich, just because it's like 50-50 if that's going to make you sick.
Right. Yeah.
So I kind of try to keep things really the same. I'll, of course, get coffee, something easy to eat, and, you know, kind of take care of that.
Yeah, so one thing, there's a speaking of being sick, so Grayson has this tradition of always throwing up at some kind of big meet. Like it hasn't failed for a long time. Like no matter.
It's at least 80% of the time I will get cut, especially when it's a busy meet.
Yes.
I tend to so the best one of these was when we went out to Reno for the first of the American Open series, and we had I think we had nine lifters or something like that
Pretty
out at that
close.
meet,
Yeah.
and I had stayed up commiserating with Alan as he was cutting weight, but I wasn't staying hydrated enough. So I stayed up late with Alan cutting weight and went to go weigh in, go check in and hang out with Mara for weigh-ins. And I get downstairs. Nope, I'm gonna throw up. So without fail, it seems like every time I let myself get dehydrated or eat some weird food. So I'm setting a goal to try not to throw up over this 4-day endeavor that we have coming up. We'll see if it works out, but it probably won't.
Yeah, and a lot of the time in the past couple of ones, they've had these energy drinks that are made with stevia, and everybody's drinking them. And then Grayson's got like 4 cups of coffee. The third session in, he's about 6 cups of coffee in, and he just looks like he's tired
Just
and
greasy and
just
wired
greasy
the
and
whole
wired.
time.
But it's a lot of fun. It really is a lot of fun. Another thing in the gym, like for etiquette wise, I think is, what do you think about when people have like a lot of distraction and noise going on? I mean, I'm all about having a good fun session, but there's a point where it reaches like, this is out of hand.
There's a critical mass.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, to a certain degree, you want to, cheer your teammates on and kind of have a good time. But for me, where I kind of start drawing that line is when it goes from being a little bit rambunctious to like borderline roughhousing stuff. That's when I have very little, like, this is like, as soon as people start, like physically giving each other trouble or
Yeah.
like, just being super loud or arguing for fun, but it's just super loud and distracting and pointless, and
Yeah.
you're just joking around.
Like across the gym.
It's just turn it down a little bit. You can give each other a hard time about, not making your last lift or whatever. I'm fine with that, but just keep it, to a minimum. And that's kind of what I was saying about in the back room, where just try to minimize distraction, because some people really thrive with that kind of like really upbeat kind of getting a little wild with it. But for every one of those people, there's people that like to try to really, collect themselves and focus before a lift. So just be courteous to those other people that, they don't respond the same way that you do to that.
Yeah.
So, just keep that in mind, if you, start getting a little wild, just take an inventory. If everybody's having the same time, then great.
Yeah,
But if
true.
somebody's, looking a little annoyed, make sure that you're, being polite and just not distracting people.
Yeah. So I don't know what the last meet was that had even a close number to this amount of people, other than maybe the Arnold that was this past year as well, but I'm
The
talking about
Arnold was
like
really
historically.
large. And I think there have been a couple of youth nationals that were incredibly large as well. But I think this is definitely the biggest, or well, I guess this is the sixth time that they've done this kind of meet.
Yeah.
But this is definitely the biggest out of those six. And then what'll be really interesting to see is it this big because it's Las Vegas? Or is this the trend that we're going to see continuing to go forward?
That's a good question. I mean, the location I think really matters, because if you put the location in Clovis, New Mexico, I don't know how many people would want to show up there. And if you don't know where Clovis, New Mexico is, it doesn't matter because it's in the middle of nowhere.
If you don't know where it is,
Yeah,
exactly.
exactly. So, I think that the location is a place that people want to go to. It's also the last meet of the series, so anybody that wants to get the chance to lift in this type of event, this is their last opportunity to do so. And I mean, just the sheer amount of people that just want to participate in this one. I don't know how big the King of Prussia one was in Pittsburgh.
I'm not sure. I'd have to look it
Yeah, but
up.
I don't think it was as close to the Arnold. And then the Arnold, this one just, added, it doubled the Arnold. So, I think that if they choose another location like this next year, like, something that's popular, that people want to go to, that's nice and, or it's like a typical vacation spot, I think it'll continue on that trend. But there's an M session for the
What?
64 kilo women. Yes, there's an M session. It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I think there is 141 participants in that weight category alone, and that does not include masters or youth.
Right.
So just in senior women, there's 141. So this is going to be an interesting event. I mean, I think we can expect that things are not going to go smoothly all the time. So I think going in with the mindset that everyone's sessions might move 30 minutes one way or another, there might be, confusion about platform changes. There's probably going to be a few hiccups just because of the volume, just because it's never been done before.
Right.
So we're going to have to stay on our toes, keep checking the email, make sure that if they change anything, that we get that announcement as soon as possible. For you guys that are lifting, do the same thing. Keep up to date. After Wednesday at the technical meeting, the schedule will be solidified. So make sure that you don't just take it for granted when you're lifting right now, because there might be people changing their totals. There might be changes of platform.
Yeah.
All of those things. Make sure that you're not trusting this schedule right now. This is a tentative schedule. Make sure that you check the updated new schedule when you can. If you're getting there early enough, if you are getting in on Wednesday and you haven't done one of these meets before, go to the new athlete briefing. It's helpful. It kind of gives you a good rundown of what to expect. And it's just kind of cool to go in there and kind of meet some of those higher level people in USAW. I think the first one I went to, Danny Camargo kind of gave a talk for about an hour about what to expect and things to like where to make sure you're being, how early to arrive at certain places, how weigh-ins are going to work, what sort of credentials you need to present, like do you need to have your driver's license? Those sort of things are good to know, and it's just good to get, familiar with your surroundings in that position.
Yeah, and if so, like with the schedule, take some responsibility for yourself. Your coach potentially has 13, 12 other lifters, depending on the size of your club. Like, if you slip through the cracks, don't blame them. I mean, take some responsibility and say, hey, I'm lifting tomorrow at this time, and we'll do our best not to forget. And I'm sure your coaches will do your best not to forget about you. But yeah, if I know one club that's taking 25 people, I could imagine that if you had to babysit every single person, somebody would get left out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for sure, definitely, if you're new, go to the new athlete briefing. There's a lot you can learn. If you're showing up there without a coach, you should definitely go to the new athlete briefing. And if you've never been to one of these, and a coach isn't going with you, you should probably make it to that. You don't want to show up just on the day that you lift and not know anything about what's going on. That you're gonna make it really hard and stressful on yourself.
Yeah, and I mean that definitely doesn't make things easier when you don't have a coach. So getting all the information you can from those briefings is always a good decision. I think that I want to personally encourage everyone to not just show up and lift in your session, but at least stick around and watch the higher level sessions. This is a really good opportunity for people to watch really high level lifters competing against each other. And we've all watched a lot of worlds on TV and that sort of stuff, but there's something different about seeing someone do a 400 pound clean and jerk in person. that really changes things up. And so, get in there and be a fan of the sport. Watch, pay attention, see who's winning. Because you can learn from watching people that are the best at what they do. You can kind of say, oh man, I see what they're doing with their technique on this, and I really like the positions they're hitting. So you can have that in your mind and try to be that, like try to emulate that person when you're getting back to training. So it can be really motivational to see it done in person versus just on an Instagram video.
Yeah, and then watching somebody lift in person, you'll see how fast they actually are. Sometimes videos can be deceptive. Sometimes they can be sped up or slowed down. But watching them in real time is a completely different experience. And when you get the opportunity, there's gonna be top level lifters there. I think Jenny Arthur is gonna be there.
Yep.
Maddie Rogers is gonna be there. CJ Cummings is gonna be there. There's gonna be quite a few people that are not only vying for stipends, but they're also, this is a last chance qualifier for worlds
That's
for a
right.
lot of them. So these are important meets for those people because they help earn spots for higher level meets. And these guys that are the ones that are funny to me are the people that say they won their session. I was like, if you think you won M session, come on. Like, just go out there and lift. You didn't win a session. Like, that's not how it works. So just go out there, have fun. If you're vying for a medal, then obviously you're in a different situation, and you're going to see that if you do what Grayson said and you show up to some of the A sessions and you see these people that are battling it out kilo by kilo for medals and spots for those world teams and stipends, then you'll see how much effort and heart they put into what they're doing. So I mean, it's kind of arrogant to count yourself in that boat when you're saying you won a session. Don't be like that, and be supportive of your teammates, and be supportive of all the lifters that are there. Like, I remember we were talking before about seeing green on the board. Like, I want to see people make lifts. When there's green on the board, it's awesome,
Yeah.
and it really adds to the flow of the competition. When people make their openers and everybody's just crushing it, it just makes the competition that much more fun and better to watch as a spectator too.
Yeah, it's definitely more fun to watch than somebody, having 3 2-minute clocks back to back and barely making the last
Yeah,
one.
that sucks.
But yeah, so I mean, keep things in perspective. If you're planning on doing a lot of these meets and you have aspirations to compete at a higher level, add up what you have at this meet. So look at where you ranked. It's like, okay, I was 75th at the American Open Series 3. When we do American Open Series 2 in Albuquerque next year, maybe you'll be 65th. That's improvement.
Yeah, for
Then,
sure.
use those sort of things. So don't worry about, winning your session. Just kind of worry about getting a place, seeing what your ranking was, and then trying to improve that the next time you go to a meet. That's always going to be dynamic because there might not be 160 people in your weight class at the next meet, but just kind of keeping track of those things is a way of kind of measuring your progress where you're like, oh, I was in the top third. I want to work up to the top quarter, and you're kind of trying to build that way up.
Yeah, so if you want to know where you're ranked currently, USAW, if you go to the site, they'll have some info on the left-hand side where you can figure out where you're ranked. You just put in what weight class you are, your age range, and all that, and you'll be able to figure out how you're ranked, as long as you have a meet that's currently within the year. I think another reason that the AO3 is a big meet is because of the new weight classes. People are looking to set new records. Maybe they're state records, personal records, national records. That's probably another draw, is that this is the first big meet where the new weight classes have been implemented and that people are going to try and compete and see how they do in those new weight classes.
It's gonna be interesting to see, just kind of what, how much more can the 105s lift when they don't have to cut, and they're at 109 now. It's gonna be kind of cool to see what goes on there.
Yeah, I agree. So that is pretty much what we wanted to talk about as far as weightlifting goes. Did you want to throw anything
Yeah,
else in
so
there?
I've been thinking about this a lot. this week, and it's I guess we can phrase it as a question. So I really struggle with seeing both the positive sides of social media and the negative ones. And we've been kind of talking about this a little bit.
Right.
And on one hand, I feel like having a broader community and giving people the ability to kind of express their opinions and follow and interact with other people can be really positive because we're social creatures, and I think that having, some sense of connectivity to the world is important. But on the other hand, I feel like a lot of times social media, you end up just comparing yourself to people, or you feel like you have to present yourself in a certain way. And I feel like it kind of breeds this insecurity that I'm not doing something interesting enough, or I'm not good enough, or all of these people are way happier than me. And so I was kind of just wondering, like, how much do you think about social media and that sort of culture is really positively impacting people's lives versus negatively impacting people's lives?
I think it depends. So if you're using social media to like create a business, or it's a gross word, but like a brand for yourself, then it could be positive. There's a lot of people that you have the potential to reach, and as long as you're a good influence in that social media community, that you can have a positive effect. Like a lot of people, they're not really set out to inspire anybody, but if you're just showing people, hey, I'm a regular person, I lift, I go through all the struggles, or even just in general, like there's happy moments in my life, there's moments that aren't that great. If you shared all of that, it would be one thing, right? But if you only share the good stuff, you always think that everybody's living their best life, and that they're light years ahead of you. They don't ever miss any lifts, or they don't ever have any bad days. That part is negative. And one thing that I don't like about social media is that if you have people that are your friends, or that you know, and they follow you, but they never like anything or comment, then you have this perception that those people are not really your friends. Like there's people in the gym that will follow another person and then never like any of their stuff, or only like specific people's stuff. And if you continually look into that, you can make yourself pretty negative pretty quickly. So I think that social media has, for me, more negative aspects than it does positive. I don't know, if I could live completely without it, I would. I remember I didn't have Facebook for a long time, and somebody asked me, he was like, "Well, are you a serial killer?" I was like, "Why? Because I don't have Facebook?" Like, all
That's
right,
jumping the
fine.
gun a little
Yeah,
bit.
but that's how people think. It's like, oh, you're not connected to the rest of the world through a computer? Like, are you a hermit, or are you serial killer? But yeah, so like for me, I think it's just more negative. You don't want to compare yourself to other people, and even when you tell yourself you're not trying to, you still do it.
And I think, it piles on this like weird sense of obligation, like you were saying, where it's like, do I have to log on to my Instagram and just double tap every single thing that I see for an hour straight every day
Right.
just to show that like people I don't hate you?
You're
You
supportive. Yeah,
know? So
right.
it feels really weird, and I feel like a lot of times like the, oh, I'm gonna set up an inspirational fitness page, I feel like that sort of inspiration is really hollow. Like they're like, yeah, get up at 5 a.m. and grind it out and take a picture of your watch and like, or just like, oh, I'm relentlessly positive and I have nothing but good days, and even when I have bad days, I have this generic positive message to share. And I guess I'm distrustful of the idea I want to inspire someone.
Yeah, that's.
Like it feels weird to me where like I don't know if that's the right word for what I want to do. I want to help people and I want to, kind of share what I'm doing. But I don't know if inspire is the right word. Like I don't know if it's, like I don't want to try to convince you that like you can do these impossible, crazy things. because I'm certainly not doing impossible, crazy things. So like, I want to show you, you know, it's what's accurate. But I mean, is it, for me, I feel like it's better to, you know, make somebody reflect than to inspire somebody. Make somebody think about why they want to do something rather than having this external inspiration by, I need to look at this person to feel inspired.
Yeah.
If you want to do something, that feeling should come from within you. And I feel like, you know, the idea of, oh, I want to be somebody's external motivation is weird to me. I don't really understand it.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because like we put people on a pedestal, and I think that's a terrible idea because humans make mistakes. And, you know, if you exalt somebody to heroic status in your mind and they mess up or they're rude one day or they say something that you don't like and then that person gets knocked down a peg, like they didn't do that to hurt you. They didn't do that to uninspire you. They weren't themselves, or they weren't what you expected them to be that one day. And so like, I think with a lot of stuff on the internet, people get offended. And like, let's say memes, right? People get sometimes, you know, they get upset about a meme, but especially these weightlifting accounts, they'll go after some of these weightlifters. But it's the people on the end that take it too personally that get mad.
Yeah.
Like the maker of that meme or whatever you post, right? Let's say you post an opinion. That person doesn't care how you feel about it. Only you do. So you being mad or you being upset, or even if they post a picture and you got left out of it and you're mad, like, it doesn't matter. You're the only one that's getting mad about it. So I think in that aspect, social media kind of makes you think you're more important than you actually are. And I think we all kind of do that. But for me, like, Instagram is a training log. I can go back and check out my lifts from a long time ago. And I know a lot of other people that do it too. They only post their stuff because it's like a training log for them. It's an archive that they can look at. And for me, I like to make memes and things like that because I think they're funny. I'll share them. And if somebody gets offended or you know, they get hurt by it, that's on them. Like, I wasn't trying to single out anybody. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, I can't control how anybody else feels about anything, so I'm not going to really worry about it too much.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's really, it feels like you have to constantly be walking on eggshells.
Yeah.
And I feel like my problem with a lot of the social media stuff is that it just adds stress where it feels like, oh, I have to post something so that I can stay relevant.
Right, yeah.
Or, oh, I feel obligated to go in and follow all of these things or like all of these pictures, when sometimes I just really don't want to do that. And it's this like, oh, I should, it's that feeling of I should be doing something but that I really don't want to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me, it just feels hard because like, I don't want to just represent like the, you know, highlight reel of what I have going on. So like, it's really hard for me to kind of think about like, well, how do you be a complete person on a social media platform? And I just don't know if you can.
Like, yeah,
I don't know really if it's like, because you always end up, it's like, oh, I have my thing, you know, I have the thing that I do.
Yeah.
And you kind of get caught up into that, and it's like, well, but that's not an accurate reflection of all the other things that I do or the other interests that I have. So it I think it adds a lot of stress. And
it kind of does, because, and you have to realize that people in person aren't who they are online.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like the ultimate catfish. And as much as you think you know somebody from their online postings and, you know, Instagram and Facebook and stuff like that, they're probably not like that in real life, or at least not all the time. And I think it's, you brought up a good point, is that people, I don't know how to explain it, other than you get your value from this thing, right? Feedback. A like is feedback. And if your whole value system is centered around getting likes and getting your validation through that medium, it's just gonna make a bad mental state for you.
When it makes you obsessive.
Yeah, that too.
Like I do this, and I hate that I do this, but anytime I post something, I just am like 15 minutes compulsively checking who looked at this.
Right.
And it bothers me because I shouldn't really care, but it's just that like addictive refresh. Oh, two more. Refresh. Oh, two more. So
Yeah.
it's that weird like, oh, did anybody share this? Like
Right.
you it almost like breeds neuroticism where you're just like, it's like, oh, how are people seeing me right now?
Right, which takes us back to the thing about you end up looking like, oh, who liked it, who didn't like it, and then you have this mentality of like, well, they didn't like my stuff, so they don't really support me. And then it's like the if you have a video and you look around, like who's really cheering for you, right? Or you look around the gym, you hit a PR and you see who's really cheering for you and who's not. But if you take that mentality to social media, it's gonna be like, well, I see all these people and they're not really supportive.
Yeah, and I mean, but that's not to mean that they didn't watch that video, go, oh, that's awesome, but just not click the like button,
Yeah.
you know? Because it's one of those kind of weird things where it's like you're attributing motive to somebody else without even talking to that
Right,
person. You're
exactly.
just being paranoid.
Right.
And I think it kind of breeds that, you know, paranoid reaction. Because at the end of the day, we're all fairly addicted to it. Like, it's like,
Yeah.
oh, like if you wake up first thing in the morning and check Instagram, I'll do it sometimes just on autopilot, and then I'm just disgusted with myself.
Yeah. Yeah, and just one thing that you mentioned was posting things to stay relevant. You're relevant regardless of what the internet thinks. Like the amount of followers is not who you are. It's like that old Fight Club thing. It's like you're not what's in your wallet, you're not your job, you're not the amount of followers you have. And if that's all you are, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, it just distracts you from really connecting with people that are next to you. Like if you're Instagramming while you're cooling down at the gym, you're not having a conversation with the people next to you. And I think that it's like, and the reason I really like doing this podcast and this sort of stuff is getting to have a full conversation is something that we don't get a whole lot. Like,
Right.
think about like during your week, like how many times do you interact with somebody and they're just thinking about when they can check their phone or responding to an email
Right.
and being able, and so, you know, I think it's important to try to make time to have real in-person connections with people rather than hitting a like button. You know, so if you're, you know, try this week, if you're up for it and you're one of the five people that listen to this, put your phone on airplane mode the whole time you're at the gym. If you need to record something, record it, watch the video, but don't access the internet at all the whole time you're at the gym. Talk to the people you train with, get to know them. They're your friends. That's your in-person community. And I think that if we can, you know, unplug a little bit, then everyone's going to get to know each other better. You're going to have real discussions, or rather about weightlifting or anything else going on. And it's always more interesting when you actually get to know people rather than who they sell themselves to be on the internet.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't have anything else. That pretty much concludes the podcast, unless you want to add anything else, Grayson.
We will be off air next week as Mundo will still be in Spain. So we will pick up week after next and do a little recap of how Masters Worlds went. And yeah, as always, guys, if you have anything that you want us to cover, questions, philosophical or weightlifting related, go ahead and send them to asaweightlifting@gmail.com or shoot us a message on Instagram. And yeah, let us know what you'd like to hear. And yeah, have a good week, guys.
All right, y'all. Happy lifting.